Hello and welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. It's pretty hard to do that introduction with a joyous tone in my voice after the display that we've just witnessed against Aston Villa. But here we are to discuss the game, stand or fall, so the banner on the North Stand says. And it's one of those moments where Brighton have done a bit of falling recently. But before we get into that, let's see who joins us in this tirade of misery. We welcome Joe. Joe, my friend, how are you?
Yeah, I'm sat here in a nice new Art of Football hoodie, which has got a lovely retro badge on it. And today took me back to those retro times. So very fitting that it arrived on a day that we get absolutely pummeled. Other than that, I just ate a Domino's. So yeah, feeling pretty good.
Good skills. Yeah, we'll talk a bit more about how today harps back to the yesteryear and some heavy defeats we've had in the past and how it compares. And we also welcome back Dagan. Dagan, how are you?
In the words of the immortal Chris Farley in the hidden camera sketch, angry. Feel a little angry. Feel a little angry, but I'm getting over it and I'm, you know, shifting perspectives. It'll be okay.
And Tom, we never ask you, how are you?
Well, look, listen, okay? Yeah, I'm not saying that my pain is above or below anyone else's, but what I will say is that Brighton fans, just be thankful you don't live in the West Midlands, because on Monday, I have to go to work and I have to hear about this, not only from adults, but from children as well. Do you know how bad it is when you've got Aston Villa fans who are like 8 taunting you? It's going to be horrific. But otherwise, genuinely, I'm not too bad. You know, it's one of those days where the grass is green, the Tories are twats, and Aston Villa beat us at Villa Park. So, you know, it's one of those things. But let's dive into this. Let's make this a cathartic experience where we can talk about stuff. We're going to do this slightly differently, as we tend to when there's a heavy defeat or a game that we just don't play very well in. Instead of going on a blow-by-blow account, we're just going to sort of analyse some general talking points and discuss where this leaves Brighton and Hove Albion at this moment in time.
We're just going to have an hour of... Ah!
If you want to have an hour of ah, Joe, we can have an hour of ah. But it is worth just remembering that, you know, things have been worse. There's been some things on like social media about like, oh, Brighton fans getting humbled. It's like, we lost 1-0 to 9-man Warsaw once. We lost some cup games to non-league teams back in the mid-2000s. I think we've done our humbling, losing a couple of games in, you know, twice in the league. You know, it's not the end of the world, but anyway, let's move on. Let's start at one of the cruxes for many people today, which was the starting 11. Now, some people are saying that this was the reason we lost the game. Another 9 changes. That's 39 changes over 5 games, which is a huge number. And we'll talk about what that means for consistency in just a moment. Mitoma and Estupiñán, the only two players that survive, I suppose you could say, after the Carabao Cup game against Chelsea. But in comes Steele, Veltman, Webster, Dunk, Hinshelwood, who gets his first start, Gilmore, March, Welbeck, Ferguson. Joe, I mean, those players between them, plenty of experience, plenty of Premier League experience, and on their day, fantastic players. Why do you think that so many fans are pointing to this starting 11 and saying this is where it went wrong?
I think what people are struggling to come to terms with is the fact that, you know, over those games, Tom, we've played 3 competitions. In the middle of those games, there's been international breaks as well. And we've had a lot of international players playing in those games. I just find it baffling that people can't quite grasp that there's going to be rotation. And my point in the group chat was all of these players are capable of playing and winning a Premier League football match. So anyone blaming the fact that they're the 11 that went out there, I'm sorry, but barring Hinshelwood today, and it's no disrespect to him, that was a very strong lineup. And the reason I don't include Hinshelwood in that is because he's inexperienced. He's 18 years old. Clearly, Roberto De Zerbi rates him, and I hope he does well. But the other 10 on there have been a massive part in winning us some incredible football matches in the Premier League. So you cannot tell me that that team was not capable of doing better than that. So for me, when the starting 11 came up, I wasn't concerned. And that for me tells me that it wasn't the starting 11 that lost us the game. It's just the sheer fact that we were outfought. We were outthought. Two different sort of pronunciations of the word. And, you know, when you play against a powerful team like Aston Villa and you play the style that we play, you're going to get tonked on the counter-attack. And that's exactly what happened. So I don't think it would have mattered whatever 11 were out there, to be honest. I think a similar game would have happened because clearly the squad aren't ready, as De Zerbi says, to play three competitions, four competitions. Yeah, that's my take. Yeah.
And you're right, Roberto De Zerbi post-match said that the squad weren't ready to play three games a week. And Dagan, he said that last year as well. Obviously, at the end of last season, we saw a lot of fixture congestion through games being rearranged. And it was a stark warning almost then that perhaps this squad weren't ready for that. Now, as tends to happen after a loss, especially a heavy one, fans start looking at the transfer window. And many people saying that perhaps we didn't utilise the transfer window to the best of our abilities. Let's take, for instance, Pervis Estupiñan. Fantastic player on his day. Many would argue the best left-back in the Premier League. Had an absolute stinker today. As many players, you know, sometimes do, it's you know, form is goes up and down. Unfortunately, we don't have another left back in the squad. We've seen Tarek Lamptey play there to great effect. However, Tarek Lamptey's minutes are being, you know, carefully monitored due to his injury history. We also talk about the fact that even Roberto De Zerbi said after the game about we have to play a different way because of losing Moises Caicedo. And yes, we have brought in Belhiba, but he's not ready yet. A lot of fans then now turning and saying, well, actually, the club should have done better in the transfer window. What do you make of that?
I mean, I think that's a fair critique, right? We made a lot of moves, but I certainly was on the trail beating the drum of, I thought there were more moves to be made. I thought we would make those moves. Both left back and right back seemed like areas where depth was needed. And it was clear to me watching Belhiba, and I've said last week, like I don't think he's the defensive presence that Caicedo is. Now, if we want to be purely attacking, you know, he offers some of those characteristics, but I'm not sure he's ever going to look like Caicedo in terms of his ball winning. He's rangy and he's athletic, but Caicedo's instincts were really stellar. I do want to come back if I can to Joe's point earlier, because I felt the opposite when I looked at the lineup. I was in the camp of those, you know, I said right away, I would be happy if we could get to the point where the subs come on and we're tied. That seemed like the best case scenario to me looking at that team sheet, because we were not a threatening squad. March has been out of form. The Welbeck Ferguson duo again, you know, dropping deep against a very physical midfield that's not going to let you turn easily, especially when there's no threat of you running away from them. And there was no threat of those two guys running away from their midfield, and certainly not their center backs. You know, after the fact, right? That those guys are not going to dribble through the team. Matoma was not featured centrally in any way, shape, or form. He really did stay on the perimeter, which I kind of expected with that duo in the center. Look, you know, I in De Zerbi I trust. But I'm not a after the fact critiquer, but I felt like this lineup was doomed from the start. I think Villa's midfield is one of the best, if not the best, in the Premier League this year with that midfield trio. They're just all really, really strong. And they drop McGinn in to be an extra, you know, midfielder in effect, and have numbers there where they're already strong. And they, you know, Gilmore was, you know, doing Herculean work, and Hinshelwood didn't make a ton of mistakes. He really acquitted himself well. It was just, we needed something magnificent from that spot today to have a chance. And, you know, we have to say, De Zerbi says Baleba's not ready, whether it's, you know, his conditioning isn't there. He cramped, it seemed like, at the end of the last game. But yeah, it felt pretty doomed, and we just haven't seen anything from Webster to make us feel a lot of confidence that he's going to do a good job back there. And he's paired with a center back acting as a right back. And there were a number of giveaways, you know, where Veltman's trying to slide inside as Gross, you know, would often do when he plays right back, and not able to field the ball. And again, that Villa pressure was present, and they turned and went the other way. But yeah, it was some very basic giveaways, the counters. I mean, it wasn't like we forced a pass into traffic. It was like we were forcing a vertical pass that we didn't really need to force with a guy with someone on his back, without looking like we were really determined to sit down on them and receive the ball that way. It was like we kept thinking like, oh, I'm just going to be to feel this is normal, and I'll turn, and there's no space, no time. Villa was all over us, and credit to them. They were aggressive from the get-go, as Joe said, aggressive and physical. But that wasn't a surprise. Like, we've struggled with Villa. I've seen us play Villa 3 times, and we've struggled with their physicality. And Emery has, you know, really had a good game plan for us each and every time. I don't know if you saw the camera cut to him at the beginning of the game. He was just moving his fingers around to his players and directing traffic. And it was like, this is all what we expected. Here's what we're going to do. I mean, you know, again, I love our manager. I think tactically he was outcoached today, and his team was out-efforted. And I think he's right to take the ownership of a 6-1 defeat. But yeah, I don't think today was the day for Hinshelwood to make a debut, unless, Tom, to your original point, he's trying to make a case that we need Locatelli. We need to go get Locatelli, is maybe what De Zerbi is saying. Cause it didn't look like we had enough today. So that's a filibuster on that question. But man, I didn't feel good about it from the start. And that's not to say I know everything, because there've been games where I've not felt good about it, and we've done perfectly well.
Now, you've raised some interesting points, and, you know, for my 2 cents on the starting 11 today, you know, I agree with Joe very much in the fact that every single one of those players has got Premier League experience under their belt. I don't like the Ferguson-Welbeck duo. We saw it against Bournemouth. Didn't work. It didn't work against Bournemouth, who are physical, but not to the same quality as Aston Villa. So why we thought it was going to work today, I don't know. We'll have a conversation about Adam Webster in just a little while. I don't want to pick on him. That sounds a bit petulant, but I don't want to single him out. In regards to Jack Hinshelwood, I think that with Pascal Gross's injury, Adam Lallana's injury, James Milner's injury, and Mo Dahoud starting against Chelsea, it is perhaps just a case of, I need to rotate, I need fresh legs, I need fresh lungs. And it does feel really harsh on young Jack. I mean, I've got to say, you know, Jack Hinshelwood, you know, at the age of 18, he made his first Premier League start today. Ironically, at the same ground he made his debut in as a sub last year. He's the first player to go from our performance centre under 9 level all the way through to the first team, which is a monumental achievement from him and the club. It's just a really sad way that he made, you know, his first team debut. I think the one point I will make just before we, you know, pile on, he says in inverted commas, in regards to Adam Webster, was I didn't see anything from Jan-Paul van Hekker or Igor against Chelsea in the week that made me think they deserved to start today. They were both poor against Chelsea. I think we were poor against Chelsea. Our passing was pretty terrible. We were poor in the first half against Bournemouth, and we were poor against AEK Athens. So this result for me has been coming for a very long time. You know, Chloe very well, you know, she said about the stat that Luton had more touches in our box than any of the relegated sides did last year. And I think from the off, there's been warning signs that this will happen this season. And today we got an absolute tonking. But in regards to Adam Webster, I don't think, as I say, that Jean-Paul Van Hecker or Igor did enough against Chelsea to start for me. Now, Joe, a few people starting to voice their concerns about Adam Webster and his suitability to De Zerbi ball. Very good under Graham Potter in a back three, bringing the ball out of defence. Seems to be his jam. And we've seen performances from Adam Webster where we've watched him and we've, you know, cried for him to be called up to the England squad. Today, he had a very poor game. It's also worth mentioning that Lewis Dunk had a very poor game. But what do you make, Joe, about Adam Webster's suitability to De Zerbi ball?
I first of all want to say we conceded 6 goals today, and that is the fault of the whole team. That is the fault of the back four. I thought there were mistakes that happened before Webster's mistakes or mishaps that shouldn't have happened. So I don't think you can place the blame on him. And as you rightly say, Tom, I don't think we're trying to single out Adam Webster as the guy that made us lose 6-1 today. And your question is he suited to play the way De Zerbi wants us to play? I don't think he is. I don't think he has the patience or the ability that he De Zerbi wants a centre back to possess. I think he's feels like he has to play him when he can't play Van Hecker, he can't play Igor. As you say, Tom, I don't think they deserved to play this game after the Chelsea game. And also rotation, because what, the Chelsea game was on Wednesday, this game was at 12:30 on a Saturday. So it's a bit of a sticky situation, because I don't think Adam Webster is anywhere near a De Zerbi type player. And that's not saying that Adam Webster is a terrible footballer or a terrible defender. He has been fantastic at times for us. But I do feel that De Zerbi ball exposes him and then opens him up to this criticism, which is, you know, we pay our money, we're allowed to criticise where necessary. But I don't think it's overly fair for us to sit here and not obliterate or berate him, because I don't think that's what we're doing, but to, on the back of this 6-1 loss, to sit here and say Adam Webster isn't good enough, because nobody was good enough today.
Yeah, I mean, Joe, I would piggyback on that to say, like, I wouldn't say that Adam Webster simply isn't good enough, but he's not playing well enough. He was at part in fault for all 6 of those goals. He made missteps in some form in each one of those goals individually. So there were other guys that made mistakes today, certainly. But to your point about, you know, the ball getting to where it was for Webster to be able to make the mistake, like, you know, if he wasn't the last one making the mistake, he was a part of the mistakes that led to the ball being there in the first place. But all of them had a Adam Webster stamp on it. And I don't know the history of the club. I haven't been, you know, I know it, but I hadn't watched it happen. But undoubtedly, he wouldn't still be with the club if he hadn't had good moments with the club and been a good player. But right now, I don't know if it's his confidence is shaken because he had, you know, a really rough game in the first game we lost, and now he's back out there again. The point I want to make about Van Hecker has looked sensational when paired with Lewis Dunk. He has looked fantastic. He has looked out of sorts when paired with anyone else. So, you know, for me, I think his foot speed, I think he's a little faster, if not straight line and turning his hips and closing down the ball quicker in a tight spot, and seems to be more accurate in getting his boot on the ball at the last second, which we desperately needed in several instances today. You know, again, I didn't see all the second half. I watched the highlights, but I know in the first half, you know, Dunk saved probably 2 would-be goals in one sequence alone. And I think I remember one early block from Webster that was nice too. But, you know, did Dunk make mistakes today? Yes. Was he the better of our two center backs? Would anybody debate that Webster outplayed Dunk today?
I don't think there's a conversation to be had about if someone's outplayed someone today.
Okay. Sure. I mean, sure there is. Like, someone played better than someone. I mean, I know that's not the conversation we want to have, but I guess my point is, like, yeah, there's blame to go around, but, you know, you're not leaving this game going, anyone, no one's leaving this game saying, well, I would take Webster over Dunk based on the performance today. And I don't think anybody would say that about him in the previous game we lost. Right. So, like, yeah, I don't mean to make, yeah, he is a professional player. He is, like, anybody who reaches this level is incredible at their job and at the work they've put in. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But whether it's fit for the system, whether it's his confidence, whether it's his form right now, whatever it is, but right now he has not been the player we need him to be. And, you know, some miscues have been a big part of two losses in a season where we only have two of them in the Premier League. I hope we get to talk about where we are in the table a little bit at some point, because that's a little bit of a rosier conversation that I can drop my feelings about.
Of course we can, Dave. We'll get onto that. But Joe, it does that. You said it really well, and I think it was the last podcast. It makes you worry about what happens when Lewis Dunk eventually hangs up the boots, because when he plays next to anyone, he makes them better. Levi Colwill was better alongside Lewis Dunk. Van Hecker is better alongside Lewis Dunk. Generally speaking, Adam Webster is better alongside Lewis Dunk. I do think Webster plays better in a back three, is my personal opinion, because then he can play to his strengths. He can carry the ball forward, which means you've still got two centre backs behind him, allowing for that to happen. But he can't really utilise his strengths in a De Zerbi ball side, because that's not really what De Zerbi wants from his centre backs. But
shall we just point out to people that when Graham Potter played four at the back, it was an absolute disaster? Because yeah, Adam Webster was a mainstay. And again, that sounds like I'm digging out Adam Webster fully, but it's not. It's simply the fact that he is not made for this system, and it's not. Yeah, it's
yeah.
We'll take what you.
Well, I'm actually remembering at some point last season where I suggested, why not try Adam Webster at right back? And part of me right now is like, would that be better? Like, would I rather have Veltman inside and him outside in that configuration? Just because Webster does like to carry the ball and is pretty nifty with his feet in a tight space and is picking out the passes from the back. The word you used, Joe, that really jumped out at me, and I wanted to say so, his patience seems to be lacking. He really seems to be pressing to make that advanced pass in a way that Dunk never seems to. Anyway, I just think that's an important.
Yeah, note. Yeah. I think he, because that he must know slightly that there is that ability lacking of him playing in De Zerbi's style of play. So I guess he tries to make himself look busier and look a little bit more alive, but actually that hinders him.
Yeah, and I think that's Van Hecke's weakness too, is he often makes that decision too quickly and gives the ball away, especially against better teams, quicker teams. I think that's the piece that's missing too in playing De Zerbi ball with our center backs, is De Zerbi, I think, is still looking for someone who can match Dunk offensively, not just support defense.
I mean, one of the things that I was disappointed about today is, and we discussed this off air, Villa were worth their win today. Of course they were. They outplayed us, they outfought us, they outthought us, and all those wonderful things that Joe said. But they are so susceptible because they have such a high line, and Newcastle utilised that at the beginning of the season really well. Newcastle thrashed Villa because of how high Villa were playing up the pitch. There was so much space behind the Villa defence, and not once did Matoma or March utilise it, which made the selection of Ferguson and Welbeck even more baffling, because surely that's the game where you want Pedro on. Surely. Or Fati or Dingra, just to go at them. And, you know, I think we as you say, Dagan, I think De Zerbi is, without a doubt, he is a genius. He gets things right more often than not, but today he got it wrong. And he has held up his hands and has said as much in his post-match. Now, again, another talking point that comes out today, and I don't normally like talking about this after a loss because it comes across as really petulant, but we have to talk about the officiating because there were some very dubious calls. Goal two and goal three. One of them was an offside position, potentially blocking Steele. Goal three was a foul on Solly March in the build-up. And the one that irked me the most is, I think it was Konsa in the second half, when him and Fatty had a bit of a coming together. Konsa, who was already on a yellow card, grabbed Fatty by the scruff of the neck. Fatty then got a yellow card. Konsa got away with it scot-free. For me, that's inconsistent. And that shows that the referee didn't want to give him a second yellow because he didn't want to send him off. That is unacceptable. If you're going to give Fatty a yellow card, you've got to give Konsa a yellow card, regardless of whether he's going to be sent off or not. It shouldn't matter. We've seen some appalling decisions from VAR this weekend and the officials. And I'm not overly upset about the two goals personally, because Villa would have probably just gone on to score anyway. But that second yellow card, that has to be given. And if it does, and it's 3-1, it's a different game. So I'd just like to welcome you to share your thoughts on those, Joe. Those moments, what did you make of goal two, goal three, and should Konsa have been sent walking? Which, by the way, is the second time in two games that a player should have been seen a second yellow card and hasn't been.
The two goals, I think you're right in what you say. I'm not overly bothered because Villa were rampant anyway and had ample chances that if those goals hadn't gone in, they would have capitalised on other chances. So I'm not going to sit here and, you know, moan about it. The only one that really gets to me is the second goal they scored, because I do think Zaniolo is fully blocking Jason Steele's eyesight. There is a graphic that came out of the lines either side showing where Jason Steele's eye line would have been, and Zaniolo is stood smack bang in the middle of it. So that's irritating. Third one, whatever. Is it a foul? Is it not a foul? Possibly, but yeah, whatever. I'm not bothered by it. The yellow card thing, absolutely, because if he's not on the yellow card, he gets shown the yellow card. There is no doubt in my mind. If Konsa's not booked, he will get a booking for that. So you're right, Tom. He's not booked him because he doesn't want to send him off. And these referees are picking and choosing moments to make these big decisions, because do they want to be the headline? Do they want to run the game? Obviously, referees run the game, but do they want to be the center of attention in the game? Like, why aren't you making these big decisions at these big moments? Because one, you're scared of criticism, probably. Two, you're in the limelight and more conversation about you. Three, it's just an utter joke. So I'm sat here trying to get angry, but I just can't get angry because I'm just so over it, Tom. I'm over being outraged by VAR. And I'm not only outraged because of our game. I've seen, as you say, Tom, some shocking decisions across today, especially in the Liverpool-Tottenham game. By the way, Tottenham at home again. Shock. It blows my mind how these professionals who are paid to do a stellar job to make our league the best in the world, to make this game the best in the world, how they're so incompetent. I don't understand the inconsistencies week in, week out, season in, season out, even with VAR help.
I'm just going to add in there, because I forgot about one as well, is the cash handball when he blocked Matoma's shot with his hands. Lewis Dunk was a penalty against Luton for less than that. I'm not saying that he would have changed the game, but again, it's the lack of consistency. And I'm sorry to ruin you and your flow, but it just crept into my mind and I thought that might just stoke the anger a little bit more.
I'm just not angry, Tom. I'm just not surprised at all by it. I'm genuinely not. And there's gonna be so many more incidences this season that we're gonna be sat here talking about the same thing, and it's just utterly boring now that we have to come here and say that the referees are shocking. Everyone knows the referees are shocking. What's new?
Yeah, the third one was the one for me, and I think because for me that one feels the most consequential, because being down three, your chances of getting back in the game are just so low at that point, statistically speaking. Where if you're down two, I've heard you guys say that, like, you know, being up 2-0 is the most dangerous score to have or something like that. And they're saying about that.
If you pull it back to 2-1.
Okay.
Like, so you're 2-0 up and the team pull one back, then it's really dangerous because you're only one goal away from a draw.
Right, which is where we would have been had that third goal not stood. And it shouldn't have. I mean, to me, that was an obvious foul. I mean, he fell on top of him, like, and the ball went flying. Like, it was clear. And I mean, part of me was like, "What could he get a yellow for that?" And he rolled up on his legs, for goodness sakes. And I guess it was accidental. But I
don't hold know. On, Dagan, are you saying there was a clear and obvious error that
clear,
the VAR didn't pick up?
Clear and obvious. And I wondered, like, did they decide it went into a different phase of play, which it clearly seemed to be a part of the buildup. Because I just couldn't rationalize. I mean, the commentators, at least here, were just, you know, completely clear. That's an obvious foul. My buddy, who is a Villa fan, who, you know, is not completely impartial. I'll just say that. He's not completely impartial. But he texted immediately, "That's coming back." Immediately, it's like, "That's coming back. That's not going to stand." And it stood. But right, if Fatty scores that goal and we're down 2-0, then it is 2-1, and that really does change the complexion of things. I mean, we did hold them without scoring for how long? From the 25th minute through the 65th minute or so. So it was a 40-minute stretch of the game where they didn't score a goal. And granted, those other the bookends were not good. But that middle stretch, and even the opening stretch, they didn't score either, right? I mean, so there's a huge chunk of the game where they didn't score goals, but when they did, boy.
And that's the thing. Villa is just so dangerous. You can't allow them those opportunities, but it all comes back to cause and effect. You know, those goals are ruled out, rightly or wrongly. Many of Brighton fans would, of course, say, you know, they should have been ruled out. Villa go down to 10 men, and it's a completely different game. Similar story against Chelsea. Chelsea should have had 10 men at the end of that first half at 0-0, and, you know, the money's on them, Brighton, to go out and win it. But, you know, we digress. We don't want to talk about the officials too much, but we can't ignore these moments in a game. It probably, as we've already said, it doesn't justify that our performance today, which was simply not good enough, and it should in no way imply that we're trying to say that Villa were lucky, because they weren't. They were well worthy winners. But if those moments do go the other way, who knows? Completely different game. Yes, Joe.
This is completely, completely, completely off subject. But as you were talking and I was listening to you, my eyes were wandering around the room, as I do when I take information in. And I just realized that this Europa League shirt, Tom, now, we're not going to wear it. The players aren't going to wear it, because we wear it away from home. Marseille play in white, am I right? Ajax also have white on their kit. We're not going to see that in action. Just
we might do might against Athens, because Athens play in yellow and black. Now, of course, we could play in blue and white, but the club might want to make a big deal out of...
I hope so.
That would be quite nice.
That would be nice.
Before we shift our attention to the Europa League game in the week, let's just talk really quickly about Fatty getting his first goal for the club. It wasn't the tidiest of finishes. He was in an offside position, but the ball came off their player, which means it stood. Ansu Fati, Dagan, initial sort of impressions on the impact he's had or hasn't had, as the case may be?
I've really enjoyed him. I mean, he looks like he's pressing, you know, when he gets a goal scoring chance. I feel like he holds the ball just a beat too long, wanting to make sure he gets the perfect clean shot. And I think that's just, nerves and wanting to return to form of being one of the most promising young players in the world and show everybody's exactly that. His work off the ball is stellar. I mean, his timing of his runs, he puts himself in position that I feel like a lot of our guys aren't even ready for him to make those runs, and they see it a little late. And you see him sort of like, he wants to get frustrated. The ball hasn't come his way at times when he's made a well-timed run, and just by the time he's seen he's going to be in an offside position. But no, I think he's been stellar. I think he's a wonderful addition. Again, I think the statement it makes having him and, you know, being willing to spend the money makes a big statement of intent. I hope our spending in January, which I know is atypical, but I hope we do something. I hope that, you know, De Zerbi has a say in spending a little of that Caicedo change that's jingling around in there. I know it's not the full 115 million. I know we haven't seen it all yet. And I know 20% went to his previous team, but there's still meat on that bone of all of our sales. And, you know, I think they're going to be more injuries. They're going to be some gaps, and I hope we can fill them, but he's wonderful. I was disappointed not to see him start just because I thought he and Pedro cut a more threatening figure, as you said, with their pace.
Yeah. It's been an interesting run of games, Joe. We've, as I said, we've looked a bit shaky defensively, in my opinion, since the beginning of the season, but as Curtis pointed out in our group chat, it seems to be since Ajax Athens in our first European game that we seem to have lost our way a little bit. And we play Marseille on Thursday. We then play Liverpool the following Sunday. So a very quick turnaround again. Looking ahead to Marseille, another tough game for us. Our first away fixture in Europe. What do Brighton need to do differently? I've got my opinion on this, which I'll give shortly. But what would you like to see Brighton do differently, be it personnel, rotation, tactical tweaks? What do you think De Zerbi needs to do differently before we go up against Marseille to help stop this? I don't want to call it a rot, because that seems a bit over the top. But you get what I'm trying to say.
Nothing. Carry on as normal. Because we've trusted the process for so long. We trusted the process last season when things were tough. We trust the process when things were rough after the West Ham game and we go and beat Newcastle 3-1. And then we go and win away at Old Trafford. So I don't think these bad moments define us and make us have to think on our feet and completely change what we're doing. Because we've got a good enough squad to go out there and compete in every single competition, every single game that we play. So I don't think it's alarm bells, SOS, we need to save Brighton from going down shit street without a paddle. I think we just carry on as we are and just hope that better days come, you know, and they will. Every time we've got De Zerbi, all the time we've got De Zerbi at the club, and Bloom and Barber, I will know that this club is moving in the right direction. There's no evidence to tell me otherwise. So let's just stay positive and stay thinking that we're going to go and see a different Brighton, as De Zerbi said on Thursday. And last time he said that after our 5-1 loss against Everton last season, we saw a different Brighton and we went to the Emirates to a team that were chasing the Premier League title and beat them 3-0. So
that was the last time we had a clean sheet.
Yeah. So, you know, clean sheet incoming, guys.
Yeah. That was May. That was the last time we had a clean sheet. That's worrying for me.
But that sounds scarier than how you make it sound, because there's an off season in between that. We've lost Caicedo and McAllister in that time. And there's been probably, 10 games in between those? 11, 12 maybe at a push. So I think that probably sounds scarier than what you make it out to be.
If we were playing Manchester City every week, maybe. But we played Luton and Wolves. And
yeah, but Luton only scored one. Wolves didn't
from the
score.
Dodgiest penalty call that you're.
Did Wolves score? Oh no, they did score.
Yeah, we haven't kept a clean sheet this season.
No, we haven't.
And I don't
that's
see
that's deservable. Yes. High risk, high reward.
Wolves are formidable. They just beat City today.
Exactly. Title challengers, Tom. Come on.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying, but let's be honest, when we played Wolves, they were in a completely different place. But anyway.
Can I also just point out, just before we move on, that we were talking about us potentially being title contenders last week. No, that's off. That's completely off the table.
Oh, Dagan disagrees.
Title contenders, yes. You title contenders don't put out that sort of performance. In
City just lost to Wolves.
But they didn't lose 6-1.
What? Villa, in their own right, is a title contender.
Fair.
Hard stop.
I just don't. Yeah, like we can't. In my opinion, after
the thing that
being humbled, we can't get too ahead of ourselves.
The thing for me, Dagan, just before you go on anything, the thing for me that will define whether we are quote unquote title contenders is how well we perform in the January transfer window,
and if we can keep a clean sheet.
We don't have the strength in depth. We have good depth, top six challenging depth. Top four challenging depth at a push, but title depth. I think the thing you got to remember about Man City is, and of course they'll have their setbacks. They will, all teams do. But even their second string 11 would walk into most Premier League 11s.
I think that was true. I don't know that that's as true as it was last year. Looking at the cup team they put out, their second group is very inexperienced. And you know, didn't get it done against the Newcastle team that we handled. Like, I just don't see the gap being as wide as everybody imagines it to be.
I know
what probability is, and I understand odds, and I understand, you know, City is the overwhelming favorite and Liverpool's the second favorite behind them. And maybe Arsenal is arguing about that with Liverpool fans. But those are the favorites. Spurs are up there right now, and maybe they'll continue to be there, but they're a little lucky to have gotten the 3 points today instead of a draw. Those things matter. Luck matters. Injuries are going to matter. And I don't think any of these teams are injury proof. And right now we're looking at, I mean, if we look at the table, we're in six, we're 3 points off first. There are six teams within one game of each other, 7 games into the season, which is nearly 20% through. It's nearly 20% through, and we're 3 points out of first. That's not a bad spot to be in while we're, you know, like our two losses have been terrible. Like they've been bad. We've looked bad. But I would say there are not many teams in this list that haven't looked bad at least once already.
That's fair. As we said at the top of the show, you know, Newcastle ruined Aston Villa, but we convincingly beat Newcastle. So swings and roundabouts.
If we win the Premier League, I will do the first Albion Obsessed episode in my pants, Gary Lineker style.
I'm not saying we're going to win it, but it would not shock me if we continue to hang around within, you know, 6 points of the leaders, certainly of the top couple, for the bulk of the season. It would not shock me. If we win one of the next two, we're still going to be hanging around the top.
This is why we love you, because we just get thumped 6-0 by Aston Villa and you're like, yeah, we'll be there or thereabouts.
I mean, it's like we've said this over and over again. Our style, when we get scored on first, we look like garbage. It's not, this should be news to no one. Like when we concede first, we get thumped. Like, but the reality is we're scoring first more often than not. Again, it's why we've won 5 out of 7 games. If we score first against those two top teams, Liverpool and City, I think there's a good chance we win those games. Certainly get at least a draw out of them.
I've got an interesting question.
Please.
So we lost, sorry, we beat Bournemouth, but we went 1-0 down.
Mm-hmm.
And you rightly say that they looked threatening and they had lots of chances. Do you think if that was Aston Villa last week, it would have been a similar result against Bournemouth? So, as in, if our opponents were Aston Villa last week at the Amex and we played the way we did, would it have been a similar result now?
Yes, because that first half against Bournemouth was awful.
Mm-hmm.
But then it goes back to your point, Tommy, you've been saying pretty much all season, we play like this, we're going to get absolutely dipped. And now we've been dipped. So
the thing that Bournemouth, well, Aston Villa have that Bournemouth don't, is a very potent attack. Ollie Watkins is absolutely lethal on the counter-attack. We know this. This should be no surprise to anyone. And yet he, you know, he scored a hat-trick against us today. So, you know, it's it should come across as no surprise to anyone that Villa utilised their strengths very well. They showcased our weaknesses very well. And apart from maybe the opening 10 minutes of the first half and the first 10, 15 minutes of the second half, we just couldn't get a foothold in the game, which is why we made, uncharacteristically, three changes at halftime. We never do that. De Zerbi has never done that in his tenure. I'm sure of it. One change in and of itself is like, ooh, but three? That should showcase just how badly we were playing. But yeah, just looking ahead to Marseille before I asked Joe the question, I had my own thoughts on this. The thing that has irked me perhaps the most is, and you've already touched upon it when you're talking about Webster, is the impatience of some of the players about looking to almost like trying too hard. And I get that it's easy for a fan to sort of sit there on the sidelines and go, oh yeah, you're trying too hard. You're trying to force the pass. But I want to just, some of our passing over the last couple of weeks has just been really poor, really poor. And for De Zerbi ball to work, it has to be pinpoint. And I know it's high risk, high reward. But there were several times that, well, today, so many of our goals came because we gave the ball away. We gave the ball away really cheaply. Villa countered. They scored. Happened against West Ham. Happened against Everton last season. And it just seems to be that when we're in that flea, you know, moving the ball forward through those transitions and through the phases, when we give the ball away cheaply by forcing the pass, we get punished for that. And then in the case of AEK Athens, they break, we commit a foul, set piece. It's a worrying trend that I've noticed quite a bit over the last few months, really. So I just really hope that it gets, that's the thing for me. If that can get tightened up, I think that will be the big thing, because De Zerbi's right, the loss of Caicedo is huge to us, but Caicedo could always bail us out of those situations last year because he had the insane ability to make tackles without drawing the foul. And you'd just be like, how on earth did you make that tackle? But we don't have that player anymore, so we're giving away more fouls in dangerous areas because we're being too sloppy with the ball. So that's the thing. I just want to tighten up. Nothing more major. For me, against Marseille, I would start either Welbeck or Ferguson alongside either Pedro or Fati. Big man, small man. You know, one to run in behind, one to
hold. I want to see Fati out wide, which is naturally his best position. I don't think we've seen the best of him because he's been forced to play in that number 10-ish role. I say ish because it's sort of like a rotation between 9 and 10 that De Zerbi seems to have his central attacking players play. I would just like to see someone other than Mitoma being run out in that position.
Whenever a Dinger's played on the left, he looks better. Better than Mitoma, just better than when he plays on the right. And he had such a good season.
And he's effective on the right as well, like really effective. So if he can be more effective on the left, then yeah, I'm all for that.
I know it was a lesser league, the Belgian league, but he had a better season at Union Saint-Gilloise than Mitoma did. So Adingra has got scary pace. So he is a threat. So maybe, you know, we will see more rotation against Marseille on Thursday. I hope Lewis Dunk starts, and I hope that's alongside Jean-Paul Van Hecker. And I just really hope that we don't see a top two of Welbeck and Ferguson, because it's just not working. But of course, listeners, let us know in the comment section down below your general thoughts on the Villa game, as well as your thoughts ahead to Marseille. Dagan, I didn't get your thoughts ahead of Marseille. What would you like to see tweaked, changed, line up?
I don't know enough. I've been wanting to watch them, and I haven't. I've been kind of keeping tabs on the results. I was actually looking at my phone, seeing how their game with Monaco finishes up, because they're playing them right now as we're recording, and Monaco is leading 3-2, and they are just beyond the 90th minute. They lost their last one out at PSG 4-0. They've only won, I think, one out of their last six, but they've got a fair number of draws in there. And most of those have been away from home. One of those draws being against Athens away in the first leg. I mean, they're a historic club that's been in a lot of these competitions. I imagine they're going to be a prideful club that's not going to let us come in there and not know who they are and find out who they are. But similar to when we played Man U, they're also a club that's in a little bit of turmoil with a lot going on. So if we score early, it's a game where I think we could really grab the game by its throat and have their fans be very upset that this relatively unknown team to them has come in and, you know, put points on the scoreboard. So I'm optimistic as I usually am that, you know, again, on the heels of a couple of losses now, that we'll see the team bounce back and be ready. I'd almost be surprised if Matoma starts, given that he started the last two. So I think you might get your wish, Joe. I would think maybe, yeah, we would either see Fatty inside again with a Dingra wide, and maybe a Fatty João Pedro start. But it would be interesting to see a João Pedro Ferguson Fatty on the left wing start, and maybe even a Dingra on the right. That'd be a fun foursome, wouldn't it? There are groups of guys, as much rotation as we've had, that we haven't seen play together yet that are pretty exciting. And so, you know, there's a lot to be excited about this squad for going forward. I don't think we've seen this club, this version of the club play its best ball just yet. And that
I think I've asked you this question before, but I just want to ask your opinion again now that a few more games have been played. Sure. And off the stat that I shared at the start of the show, 39 changes in 5 games. We know that they're warranted, but do you feel like this sheer amount of changes is hindering any coherence within the side?
I'm sure it is, but I think it's a long game too, right? I mean, we're in this with particular targets in mind, and we have talked about what we think those targets are. I don't think the target this year is winning the league, right? I do think the target is making Champions League. I really do. And I think as long as we're within shouting distance, and we certainly are right now, of those places, I think we're gonna be conservative with our guys. We're going to rotate lots of players in. De Zerbi's going to continue to show belief in lots of different players and give them chances to show what they can do in these big moments. And then maybe as we come down the home stretch and we've absolutely got to get a result, and maybe at that point we're in fewer competitions, maybe we're not. Maybe it's like last year and we're, you know, still in the FA Cup. But I think it'll be interesting to see how different we look then and how different the personnel decisions are at that point. But right now, I think very much there's a long game being played and figuring out who plays well with each other. You can't figure that out if you're just, you know, continually playing the same group. Or you play the same group with one guy and then one more guy and then one more guy. And I've heard a lot of suggestions to that effect. Like, well, maybe we played the same, you know, six guys every game and they start. And then there's, you know, a few that rotate in and out. It's like that does sound nice, but I don't know that it's practical, nor would it satisfy the number of players that we have that rightfully feel like they deserve a chance. And you know, that the beauty of the depth we do have is there are a lot of guys who can be out there. I think it depends on the opponent for some of those players, whether or not they should be in that particular game. But certainly everyone we have is capable of playing in some of the games that we will play this year.
And that's where sometimes you benefit from playing lower league opposition early in the Carabao Cup.
Yeah. Because
you get the opportunity to try players out. Obviously, playing Chelsea first off the bat probably didn't help in that regard because we, you know, we were up against a very strong, I say strong, a Premier League opposition. So you probably had, De Zerbi probably felt like he had to play his more experienced players. But I wonder if that was a League One club, League Two club member, maybe we would have seen a bit more rotation. But who knows? Gentlemen, we've done quite well to escape the mundane, you know, moan fest that this could have been. So kudos to you both.
Can we do player of the match?
Billy Gilmore is the only acceptable answer.
The fans. The
first 10 minutes.
Anyone who travels to Birmingham today, you are player of the match.
Well, I travel to Birmingham today. Do I get player of the match, Joe? Or does that not count because I live here?
No.
That's true. As I said, you know, just be grateful that on Monday mornings you get to go to your place of work or your place of education and you don't have to worry about Villa fans. The same cannot be said for me. Keep me in your thoughts and your prayers. All that's left to be said then, guys, is thank you very much for tuning in. Hopefully this has been a cathartic experience. But Dagan has one more thing he would like to say. Oh, Dagan, you're muted, mate. You're muted. Unmute yourself.
Got one more note. I've got one more note, and it's a good one. This is the last thing in the aforementioned group chat from the Villa fan. And he just notes, Chelsea is 1 point ahead of Luton. Just want our listeners to keep that in the back of their mind. As we had a rough day, we could be just 1 point ahead of Luton, and we're not.
Have a great week, Albion Obsessed listeners. Yeah. Have a great week.
That would have been such a good ending, but I need to remind everyone to check out One Klopp Shop and to use Albion Obsessed, all one word, all uppercase, to get 10% off vintage football shirts. Go check them out. Some fantastic stuff. But as Dagan rightfully says, and as rightfully should be the end of the show, it could be worse. It could be 1 point above Luton, and we could have just lost 1-0 to nine-man Warsaw, or 9-0 to Darlington, or some other nonsense that happened during the Withdean years. It could always be worse. Wherever you may be, whenever you may be, we hope this has been a cathartic experience for you, and we'll see you next time. Take care.